from Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino and the Music Row Show.
All right. Hello, friends. Welcome to the Music Row Show. What a gorgeous day today.
It was perfect.
I mean, I didn't go outside.
I hate the outdoors, really.
Yeah. Sunshine. Welcome to the Music Row Show. My name is Scott.
And my name is Hino. Thanks for tuning in again tonight. As you know, this show is for all you songwriters and musicians and performers out there who are just trying to figure stuff out here in Music City.
That's right. Now, remember, we don't have any answers.
Not even one.
We're out there slinging songs during the day just like you guys, but we are able to bring smart people in and bring them into the studio, pick their brains, and give you the opportunity to join in the conversation as well.
Absolutely, and you can do that by hitting us up on Twitter, at The Music Row Show, or our email account, mail@themusicrowshow.com.
Can they not Facebook?
And if you're still using Facebook, you can go to The Music Row Show on
Facebook. Oh, are you now one of those snobs now? Yeah. Now you don't do Facebook?
Yeah.
I know. This is like when you were all about iPads and...
Yeah, nobody uses those.
Well, I know, but the thing is, people use other things too. So, you know, lots of people use Facebook.
That's true.
So don't be that way.
Okay. Mom, if you're using Facebook, go ahead and
Now it's just moms. You know,
I'm just kidding. You know,
you're just really good at alienating half of our audience, aren't you? You're good at this.
You know what we do have, though, is a really, really cool show tonight. We got songwriters and recording artists Roger Hodges and Jeremy Drinkwine of the group Drinkwine with us right now.
That's right. And then we have a mute button that Katrina's going to put over on one of these mics very soon. Then we welcome old friend and hit songwriter Dylan Altman in hour two. It's going to be a good time.
That is so true. All right, Scott, let's get to it.
Okay. Now, you know, Hino and I have been talking lately, and we've decided that every now and then, you know, typically we bring in people that have been
seasoned,
have been around for a long time, and we've decided that every now and then we're going to start bringing in some of the new buzzier writers and artists that people are talking about. Everybody's talking about these guys.
Absolutely.
Just to get a closer look at the starting point of music careers, and because it's everything's changed in this technological age. You know, I mean, you guys are doing things that other people weren't 20 years ago,
ten minutes ago.
Yeah. But our pal Gary Chapman suggested that we talk to these guys. They've been in the business. They've been out of the business. They've been back in again. As solo artists, there's been success in the contemporary Christian world and cuts here and there in country and Americana songwriting wise. One of them has 20 plus years as a worship leader and a pastor.
Sweet.
And nowadays they're hitting the road together. They're recording and making noise wherever they can. Roger Hodges, Jeremy Drinkwine, AKA, which is also known as, I just found that out. Drinkwine. Welcome to the Music Row Show.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all for having us.
Yeah. And what's really awesome, what a marketing perfect thing when you have a name like Drinkwine. What did they bring with us? A bottle of wine that says Drinkwine on it. So that's awesome.
We're not allowed to touch here in the WSM studios,
but we're
not going to.
Right there.
No.
As incentive, just for later. So what brought each of you guys to music? What was the lure for you?
Just passion for it.
Passion for it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's music is... really become, you know, just a major part of my life. I mean, I pretty much live, eat, breathe, and sleep it. You know, it's, I think for most songwriters and artists in general, I mean, they'd probably all say that. It's just, it's a part of our life.
Yeah.
It'll never leave.
Well, do you remember when it started for you?
When I was a kid, you know, I remember, you know, my dad, I think we talked about before, he was a pastor. And so I'm a pastor's kid. So growing up, you know, they'd have, you know, guys come in and out of the church, you know, to do specials and things like that and shows or whatever. And,
sure.
And I just remember seeing those guys up there on stage and just kind of what they did to my soul, what they did to my emotions. And I just, I don't know, man, I just fell in love with it early on as a kid. And, you know, started listening to, you know, the Beatles and Tom Petty and, you know, just Johnny Cash and just, you know, people like that just had depth and, you know, I don't know, just passion in their music as well. And it just, I don't know, I was hooked.
Cool.
Yeah.
How about you, Roger?
Oh, man, I have music in my blood. My dad come from the Texas Panhandle.
Mm-hmm.
And as you may know, it's super rich heritage in music. Buddy Holly, Waylon Jennings, Buddy Knox, all these guys in the late 50s, early 60s. And my dad was a part of that scene.
Mm.
So when I came along, it was just natural. My earliest memories of me with a guitar is probably 5 or 6 years old, sitting on the kitchen counter with my mom cooking supper, singing her Hank Williams song, "Your Cheating Heart."
Wow.
And so it's been a couple of years.
Now, were you actually playing the chords?
Yes. I learned to play when I was
at 5 years old? Really?
Wow. I haven't gotten much better since then. But
did you have that beard then at 5 years old?
Yes. Nice. Absolutely.
Impressive.
It didn't have any gray in it.
Very impressive. Yeah.
I didn't learn to play guitar until I was like 20.
Yeah.
And I was in the living room with like whatever I could use as a microphone. That was my deal, to sing. That was like, so I didn't know how to play anything until I was later on in life when I had to start writing. Because I was in a band, lead singer in a band in high school. So, you know, I didn't, you know, they were the music writers. And so when I left that band, I had to figure something out. So.
Well, let's talk about that real quick, because if I'm not mistaken, you're talking about Finn.
Yeah.
And what everybody wants to know is what happened to Finn.
Well, we were kids, man. I mean, and we had a developmental deal with Warner Brothers, and, you know, we just... Man, we were young. We didn't know what the heck we were doing. But we, you know, we did an EP type thing or whatever. And then before it was released, we broke up. So
what?
Yeah.
Well, and that's kind of what I wanted to talk about is what now that you've had a few years under your belt, what are some of the biggest challenges in starting and keeping a band together?
Oh, gee whiz. Man, I tell you what, I don't know that you can pinpoint any one thing. It's really just, it's kind of a miracle if you can find the right people in some ways. But you know, I think it's just letting people be who they are in a band, you know, not trying to, you know, make them be something that they're not. Because I think you get a great, you know, energy and synergy when each person can be, you know, who they really are coming out of their instruments and that sort of thing. I mean, he and I, we just clicked right off because we both have kind of a worship background. And so we're able to kind of feed off of that with each other. And, you know, I think it's we developed a pretty quick friendship. And so I think that really helps when you're good friends and you can let each other be who they are. Mm-hmm. That's key, really. Okay. Is.
Well, let's talk about that. How did you find each other?
I'll let you take that one.
Well, to be honest, I mean, I've been coming to Nashville. My brother-in-law lives here. And we've been coming out here every summer for 15 years, 18 years, I don't know, a long time. And I, through a friend, had a couple of writing appointments, met a guy named Blue Foley, who a lot of people around town know, because if you've been within 100 yards of him, you know him. Everybody loves Blue. But I saw that on my Facebook that he was at a writer's night just down the road. We were staying out in Lebanon, and he was at a writer's night at this place called the Rusty Nail in Hermitage.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I'm like, well, plus a guy that played bass on one of my CCM records was playing that night with another guy that I hadn't met yet, Tommy Collier. And I'm just going out and see him. I walked in and he's singing one of the songs that we have put on the EP, Devil in the Wine. And I was absolutely blown away.
Wow.
And we weren't living here. We were visiting. And I've been feeling transition out of vocational ministry for 5 years. I probably should have done it 5 years ago. However, I saw him doing what he did, and I just walked up after his set. I said, "Dude, I don't know what that was, but if I can help in any way, I'd love to help." So, short story long.
That's good.
Months,
we got
two
an
months
hour,
later,
man.
We moved to Nashville, and we start doing. I start showing up at the Rusty. Now I didn't even do my writer's thing for almost a year. I guess.
Wow.
Just showed up and became friends and started producing a record for him, and it has evolved from that into this. So that's kind of how it happened. Yeah.
So at what point do you say, "All right, let's be a band"?
That was kind of a combination of things, I think, for us. I mean, we sort of kind of grew into that. I don't really know exactly at what point that happened. I think we just we started.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I got here. What happened?
Yeah, no, I know.
Who am I?
No,
we started recording these songs, and he was playing with me at these writers' nights, and we just had this energy on stage that was really, I don't know, it just worked. It just fit. It was comfortable. It was easy, and people loved it. So, I think that's kind of really, you know, I think back in maybe November, December, we just decided, okay, this is it. This is what we're doing. I mean, mm-hmm. Let's make this a band and let's, you know, see what happens.
So then, you know, for people who are out there trying to start a band or thinking about doing it, you have that let's start a band decision. What do you do next? What are the building blocks? What do you do?
You know, really, there's, you know, no method. I think everybody's journey and story is probably a little different, but I'd say it's just do what you know how. Mm-hmm. You know, really, in the moment, do what you know. I mean, for us, it's writing songs. It's playing every Tuesday and Wednesday night, you know, at the Rusty Nail at Blue Bar on Wednesday nights. And just kind of see where the journey leads you rather than trying to make something happen. Because I'm telling you, if you try to make it happen, it won't. Mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10, if you just keep doing what you do, just plug away and, you know, things will just start kind of falling into place. And you'll know as they start happening what directions to take and that sort of thing.
But having that regular gig, I mean, that's part of it.
Oh, yeah.
It's
not going to happen sitting at home.
We have incredible synergy between us because we play together all the time. We don't have a normal drummer, normal bass player. We just pick up guys, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. Got to careful how you say
yeehaw.
That. Yeah.
You just
What did I do?
Nothing.
No. Oh, that sounded awful. We pick up guys to play gigs.
Gotcha.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Hey, you know, we don't judge here.
Yeah.
This
wow,
is a judge-free
hey,
zone.
Good. If I got people back in Texas listening, I may have to cancel this trip we've got next week. They do.
Well, okay, let's back up before we turn into a weird place
here. I didn't do that.
I know you didn't. I know you didn't. Heino was just so happy that someone else said something like that.
It's usually me.
So why? Let's back up a bit. Why do you think so many preachers' kids are performers? Because I'm thinking, I don't know, there are a ton of people we've interviewed that have dads that mm-hmm. are preachers. So I'm thinking, this is an idea.
Sure.
Spitballing here. Preacher Palooza,
right
here in Nashville. Okay. We have all the kids of preachers do this huge concert and then have a support group afterwards. What do you think of that?
Yeah,
I'm in.
Yeah,
because I need support.
I think the group needs to come first.
You think first?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. No, but seriously, what do you think that is about? Is there an element in performing and preaching there? Or what do you think?
Man, I think so. I think when you're a preacher's kid, I think some preacher's kids just are crazy town, and some mm-hmm. preacher's kids aren't. And I don't know what that is really, but I think in all of us, there's an element of, I think it's hereditary. I think, you know, we just... there's this inner sort of calling, so to speak, you know, mm-hmm. to be in front of people to kind of, you know, give some message, you know, and maybe for me, it's through music, you know, for some, you know, like pastors, it's, you know, from the pulpit or whatever. But, you know, I'll tell you that music is important to me in the sense that I want to say something. I want people in the audience to feel what I'm feeling when I'm performing. And I think pastors kind of do that too. And to some degree, and you know, we're all kind of in a way spreading some sort of message, you know. So I don't know. I think it's probably hereditary in some form.
And I think when you grow up in church, music gets in you.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, there's just this element of music that happens when you're there every week, and you see the power of what happens in music. And once it gets in you, if you have a gift to do it, you can't hardly not do it.
That's right. A great point.
It's
yeah.
like I couldn't stop today if I wanted to.
Right.
Which know. Answers that first question, you know, in some way.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
why do you do this? Because I can't help it.
Yeah.
I mean, literally.
It's who I am. It's not what I do. It's who I am.
Yeah.
You know,
awesome.
So, yeah.
Well, I, for one, am impressed that you remembered the first question. So, I mean, that's pretty.
Thank you.
That's pretty.
Thanks for reminding us. Because
yeah,
we're like, what?
We forgot.
Did you see me please blank out there?
Really?
Wow. All right. We got to take a quick break, but we're going to be back with a whole lot more of Drink Wine here on the Music Row Show.
We'll be right back. saint wears his prison tattoos like war paint. He's got a touch of the crazy, gives in to the moment. Living life a sinner since full-time employment. Lost daddy when he was 14. It was just mama and James Dean. He's a criminal.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are here with the group Drink Wine, and that is a tune off their new project called James Dean. That's cool.
Thank you.
That.
Thank you.
Kind of sounds like a cross between U2 and Eric Church.
Yeah, you think?
Does it really?
With a, yeah. With a reading something.
with a touch of wallflowers for some reason. Right. Why am I hearing wallflowers?
Oh, man. You know, it's kind of interesting. So many bands these days have two or three members, you know, instead of like the whole, you know, every instrument covered. Talk about the decision to just have you two guys and why you didn't, you know, do the whole, you know, five member thing. And how'd you come to that decision?
It was a financial decision.
Okay.
So far it is.
Yeah. No, really. I don't know. Typically in a lot of bands, there's like, what, two or three core members and then they, you know, tend to hire out some instruments or whatever. I'm a band guy, always have been. I mean, since high school, I've always been in bands. And so I would love it if there were like four or five core members, but it just, for whatever reason, just hasn't worked out that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, in Nashville, you know, everybody is great, but they cost money.
Yeah, you know? Even to practice. You got to pay people to practice.
Yeah, and we got kids and everything, which, by the way, I would just want to say hello to my kids, Lyric, Cecily, Lachlan, and Ephraim, and my wife, Jenna. At home, I love
any,
you guys.
Any pets?
Well, Maggie and Abby, but
okay,
yeah,
neighbors.
They're not listening.
They don't care. They're just they're smelling something else in the living room. I'm sure
they're licking something.
Dog.
Now we're talking about the pets, not the neighbors.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's just it's a money thing, really. To be honest with you, it's just it's hard enough to do this, you know, from a financial standpoint, because I work full time during the day. I do this in the afternoons and the evenings, and so, you know, we're free. And so we do this, the duo thing, as much as we can, and then when we have shows, we, you know, hire guys that love us and that we love and are willing to play with us. So.
We'll talk about, you know, and again, you know, we're in 38 states right now, so people that aren't, maybe that are thinking about coming here or something, and maybe that might surprise people to know that if you're looking to get a band together, you got to pay them.
Oh yeah,
to practice. You got to pay them to learn the music and all of that.
Yeah, I know people that you know, get full time jobs just to support their music habit.
Right.
You know, so they work, you know, full time or whatever, and they spend as little as they can on beer and food and rent, and then they use the rest of it to pay guys to play showcases or whatever, and they save up to, you know, spend thousands of dollars on an EP or a record or whatever.
Yeah, and there's an element of it, too. I mean, we have some really, really good friends that have road gigs.
Yeah.
And we could get them to play with us, but I don't even feel right about asking them to play for free.
Right.
Sure.
I just don't, because that's
what they do for a living.
It's their bread and butter, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's so we do without for now, and there's got to be there's a curve, hopefully, and when the curve happens, it'll, you know, change. But
yeah,
we have to learn to be content where we are today.
Yeah, that's right. Not easy.
But. I hear you. Well, we'd be content to hear a song from you guys.
Oh,
you feel like doing something?
You gotta pay us.
Oh, well, in that case, this has been the Music Row Show.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, and good night.
I was joking.
All right.
Let me get this.
Well, we'll do acoustic version of that first song, James Dean, that you guys were playing.
All right.
There.
Sweet.
Lives like a heathen, loves like a saint, wears his prison tattoos like war paint. He's got a touch of the crazy, gives in to the moment, living life a sinner, it's his full-time employment. Lost daddy when he was 14, it was just mama and James Dean. He's a criminal. He can't hide his flaws, makes his living getting dirty on the backs of the law. He's got a heart like heaven, his soul's got a glow. But if you didn't know him, you'd think hell broke the mold. Lost daddy when he was 14. It was just mama and James Dean. James Dean's just a man never given a chance, but he's got his angels, sheep in wolves' clothing. God only knows him, he's got his angels. A rebel don't break the law if a rebel don't have a call. He's a miracle, should have taken his life, but there's something about a man that tells death to die. He's been shot in the chest and overdosed twice. Yeah, hell's always wanted him, dead or alive. Took his daddy when he was 14. It was just mama and James Dean. James Dean's just a man never given a chance, but he's got his angels, sheep in wolves' clothing. God only knows him, he's got his angels. A rebel don't break the law if a rebel don't have a cause. Sheep and wolves clothing, God only knows him, he's got his angels. A rebel don't break the law if a rebel don't have a cause. James Dean's just a man never given a chance, but he's got his angels.
That's a great song.
Thank you so much.
Wow.
Thank you.
Nice. Very nice.
Hey, Roger.
Yes, sir.
We're gonna head into a different direction just for a minute because I don't always get to talk to folks about this. So we're going to go back to what you've been doing for the past 20-some years.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
There is... I was at a church once, and the worship song ended up going and going, and the whole church... Got it so deeply that the preacher was just like, keep going.
That's where I come from,
and,
buddy.
And the entire hour there was no preaching because the song just took it. So sometimes there's a pure emotional response when a worship song hits the mark that's, I mean, it's pretty much indescribable. Is there a way to tap into that in a live secular situation? Maybe, have you guys ever seen someone do that or experienced something like that?
The truth is, like, absolutely. And this is where me transitioning from vocational ministry to what I'm doing now. Mm-hmm. First of all, well, I don't even know how to start this, but I became dissatisfied because the people that I love and a lot of people that I deeply care about won't darken the doors of a church. Mm-hmm. And I know that that experience that you just described is not confined to the four walls of a church.
Right.
And this is what I saw the first time I walked in and saw Jeremy. Mm-hmm. I saw what I had been doing in church happening in a bar. And frankly, I mean, I had seen that in my mind. And playing in Texas bands and backing a couple of guys in Texas, I would take two or three of my own songs and kind of do not blatant gospel songs, but a Rodney Foster song like Revival. I don't know.
That's a great song. Mm-hmm. Man.
And see people shouting that song at the top of their lungs and seeing people moved by that.
Yeah.
And got the fever, and I got some more cowbell too. But no, but no, I just felt this draw to do that outside of the walls of the church.
Okay.
And so I started doing that. But then when that happens and you're at a gigantic 10,000, 11,000 member church, the rub starts happening because, oh, this guy's playing at bars and this guy. And frankly, I just felt called away from vocational ministry, which, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, it happens. I had people think I was crazy, and they probably still do. But we experience this. And that's the coolest thing about what I see in Drinkwine is we have people come up after our show sometimes. I don't know what that was, but it was like church.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, to answer your question, yes, absolutely.
This okay.
Because it goes back to the other question. This is not what we do. It's who we are.
Right.
And yeah. It's a gift. It's not something I've dreamed up. And we practice and we do what we do to get better. But there's a gift in us that can't help but come out.
Right.
Does that make sense? And that's not arrogant. Yeah. I'm an idiot. I'm not. It's nothing I ever did right. It's right. nothing he ever did right. It's like God saying, in my mind, where I don't, you know, we probably have people listening that believe all kinds of different things. But from where I stand, God looks at me and says, do this. And then something magical happens. I don't know.
And I don't have 20 years like he does, but worship is a part of, you know, me too. I led worship at Belmont Church downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's just something that is ingrained in myself too. So like, you know, we do a, you know, roughly 10-minute version of Devil in the Wine when we play it live with a full band, and because it goes on forever, just like what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And people join in, raising their beers in the air, singing Jesus Save Me from the Devil and the Wine. I mean, that's, for me, that's that's a worship experience.
Yeah.
You know, to some degree, people, you know, singing those words and it meaning something to them like that, that's a big deal in my heart. I mean, it does something to me, and we watch it happen. You know?
So can you quantify what, is it kind of an indescribable thing, or can you quantify what it is about your show that creates that? If somebody else wanted to try to do the same thing?
If we want to copy you.
Yeah, if we wanted to rip you off tomorrow night.
Man, I think it's just we let each other be who we are. I let him be Roger Hodges. He lets me be Jeremy Drinkwine. And it just, our hearts both go to that place. We always do. There's been this thing, we begin with worship and end with worship in some form. It's more just the musical feel of how things happen, and people respond to it. I think there's a, I don't care who you are, there's an element of music, whether I'm listening to, you know, Garth Brooks or Coldplay or Arcade Fire, I'm getting an experience out of that music,
right.
That's intangible, that doesn't even really mean anything in the words necessarily. There's something about the music that's happening,
right.
And it's happening in my soul, and I see it happen in the audience. I watch it, and it's powerful. You know, guy came up to me one night and said, if you had sang that chorus one more time, I think my knees would have fallen out from under me. I was that moved, and I think I got saved tonight.
Wow.
And I don't know what.
And
that,
you were at a bar.
We were at Whiskey Jam.
That is awesome.
Yeah, at Winners downtown, and you know, and I don't know what that meant for him, but I know what him saying that to me meant for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so in a way,
yeah. And we don't wear that like a badge.
No,
I mean,
it's not.
It's like, good grief, man. I just know where I came from, and I'm not sure where I'm going, and I know this is the experience that's happening right now, and that's what's happening.
That's not the intent. Sure. It's just that's what happens.
Our intent is to glorify God. Obviously, I would hope, like most people that have, you know, the faith that we have would say the same thing. But this is just how it's expressed in this deal. When I do my, you know, I write, and when I mm-hmm. do my songwriter set, it's just good country songs, you know.
Yeah.
There's just something that happens here that's like, wow, what was that? Sometimes we go, we didn't do that. So it's hard
just,
to explain.
It's just it's a real kind of thing. It's not
yeah.
anything.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a break. We need to say nice things about some people. So
yeah, that's true.
We're going to be right back with more with Drinkwine. You're listening to the Music Bro Show. Stick around.
Oh yeah, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here with Drinkwine. That's a tune off their latest project called Thinking About You.
And
so I'm just curious. Did you guys flip for it? I heard a rumor that your band was originally going to be called Hodges, but then you flipped for it and it became Drinkwine. So how did you guys?
Rumor is false. I never had a chance.
Never had a chance, huh?
Not with a name like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just cool. Everybody, is that really his name?
Yeah.
That's a real deal.
Yes, it is.
Well, hey, let's get another tune. This is a short segment. Let's get another song at
y'all. Oh, we'd love that.
Daddy beat his demons, his daddy let him win. He found a hero in Jesus, he passed on to his kids. Knew how to love when no one taught him. He gave us everything with nothing. He's a memory now, passed on some years ago. I hope to God every day that Daddy keeps running through my veins. Oh, I pray bloodstains, bloodstains. I pray bloodstains. His impressions were subtle, but deep. In this town, a silent pillar, he was a voice without a sound. Not respected, 'cause he was right, but for how he lived his life. He's a memory now, passed on some years ago. Daddy keeps running through my veins. Oh, I pray bloodstains, bloodstains. I pray bloodstains. God, I pray you let it run, let it trickle down to my son, a legacy of faith and love. Have his fire, the strength to burn it higher. Give him something to be proud of. Bloodstains, I pray. Bloodstains, I pray. Bloodstains.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Woo! Woo! Nice. I like that song a lot.
So you guys are heading out this week to go to Texas, and Roger, you spent a lot of time in Texas. What makes that one state different from everywhere else musically? I mean, that's a whole nother world there.
Let me tell you something.
Tell me something.
If you can get accepted in Texas,
mm-hmm.
it really doesn't matter what anybody else thinks.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a little bit of truth in that. You know what I'm saying? It's like, because for lack of a better way to say it, they just don't take any BS there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's, I love Nashville. I love current country music.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, some of it's a little tougher for me to take than others, but it grows on me. And it's like, I'm not one of these guys, oh, everything Nashville is terrible. No, it's great. But there's just an authenticity down there
mm-hmm.
that... if people love you there, it gives you confidence to do a whole lot of other stuff. I think, I mean, I there's just a genuineness to the people and their love of music. And it's like, people will sit there and listen.
Yeah.
You know, it's cool. very, very cool place to grow up and to be influenced from Robert Earl Keen to Waylon Jennings to, you know,
right,
whoever. And then to bring that here, and to, it's just funny. When people find out you're from Texas, oh, you're from Texas, you must be cool. No, not really. But, you know, there's just this thing about it.
Well, it's funny. We've kind of lost count. We've had more hit writers on this show over the years from Texas than anywhere else.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, that's...
And I think Carolina's next.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Carolina's, it's coming on strong right now.
But
yeah.
I think Texas is kind of in the
lead.
Texas. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, So I know what you mean. All right. We're going to take a quick break, but we're coming back with some more Drink Wine here on the Music Row Show. Oh, yeah. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here with Drink Wine, and that's a tune off their latest project called Blood Stains. And, man, we just heard them do that one live, and that's a good tune.
Thank you.
That's a good tune. Talk about writing that one.
Oh, well, that one was me. I wrote that by myself. That's about my dad. My dad passed away in 2006, and so... I kind of explain it like this. There's some songs that you want to write, but right. if you try to force it, it just will never be what you want it to be. So that was one that just kind of dropped out of heaven in some ways. I was actually watching a television show, and somebody said something about he hoped blood stains, you know, like talking about his uncle. And because he was such a good man, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's my dad. You know, just talking about what a good man he was. And so really, it's kind of an ode to him, you know, and he was just, he was inspirational, really, he was. And I miss him every day. He he had a powerful influence on the people that he knew. So that's where that came from.
Nice.
Well, let me ask you. You've been around for a while. You've been in town. You've won some talent contests, Rising Star competitions, and stuff. If you were talking to a room full of young buck singers who were all just planning to pack their cars up in the next few weeks and come here, what would be some pieces of advice that you wish you would have been given when you first came to town?
Well, I would say this: don't give yourself 1 year, give yourself 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
The reason is that if you put a limit on your time here in town, you'll get angry and run away, you know, because the truth is if you were the big stuff in your hometown, you are a small guy here because there's a lot of really talented people here. And so you've got to, you know, get here, find your tribe, you know, find the group of people that you trust, that you write with, that you can learn from, and then dig in, stay here a while, because, you know, if you plan to only try it for a year, then you're just going to go home. That's just the way it is. You know, it's you've got to give yourself time to get rooted and to settle in and to grow your craft, to really, you know, hone in on your craft and get better at it, and put yourself around people that are going to tell you the truth. They're going to be hard on you, and you will grow if you do that.
Yeah.
Tell you the truth about your music and
your
writing.
Your songs. Yeah. About your songwriting. I mean, you know, that'll tell you, you know, I don't get it. I don't get the hook. I don't understand it. You know,
we are very fortunate that we hang out with a group of people who care. I mean, and I don't see this all over town, but we care deeply about each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like church. It's like we're straight up, and somebody will come in with this song. It's like, man, this is the best thing I've ever written. No, it's probably not. You know, we're just real truthful. Like, did you think about this or this? Or that, you know, and we just nobody gets feelings hurt. I mean, every now and then it's hard. You know, it's your baby. But we are brutally honest with each other, and it's caused us all to get better. I mean, just honestly.
Yeah, Blood Stains, actually, I rewrote that 2 or 3 times, sending it to this guy, because he would just be like, you know, it's good, but it's not the Jeremy Drinkwine I know. You know, you got something better in you.
Right.
And so he challenged me, and I went back and, you know, rewrote some lines, and it became what it is right now, you know. So it you know, it takes that.
Yeah. I've got some notes to give you after the show.
Oh, sure.
No,
sure.
I'm just kidding.
We love to hear them.
Totally. Yeah.
For a small fee.
Oh, man. So you guys playing around town anywhere people can come see you?
Absolutely. We play pretty much every Wednesday night at the Blue Bar. It's called the Freak Show, the Midtown Freak Show. And we play at the Rusty Nail on Tuesday nights.
Over in Hermitage. Yeah. Yep.
And we do both of those pretty consistently. And we do some
times?
Of those. What's that?
Times?
Oh, 7 o'clock, 7:30 at Blue Bar and 7 o'clock at the Rusty Nail.
Okay.
And we usually go on about 8:30, 9 o'clock usually on those. But they start at 7.
Oh, I
7:30,
see.
7:30, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, we just got a couple minutes. I just have to know, how did y'all get hooked up with the Jonas Brothers' dad?
Bible college. He and I were on staff at Bible college together.
No,
I was at
kidding.
The hospital when those boys were born.
Really?
Yeah, and we used to babysit them. And very close family friends, and had, you know, he went to pastor a church in New Jersey,
uh-huh.
And I was stayed on staff there, and then wound up living in Amarillo, and we kind of stayed in touch over the years, and all of a sudden, you know, they're on TV every day, and I'm still in Amarillo, and but when I moved here, we began to talk. He was real instrumental in getting me out of my comfort zone, to be honest. He's a great leader and a really great man. And kind of pushed me out of the nest when it came to this transition out of ministry, because he had done it quite successfully. Obviously, he manages
right.
his boys and,
sure.
and a whole bunch of other people. But we stay in touch, and he's given us guidance, and a guy that works with him is kind of managing us right now. And so, yeah, that's it. We're just
very
good friends.
Cool.
I actually stayed in their house in Southlake on my way here in my moving van. So.
So see, Sweet. If you write a book on how to get a manager in the music business, you could say, be in the hospital when his kids are born.
Yeah.
That it's easy.
Works. Simple as that.
Easy.
You know what's funny? He can make a phone call and have us on Good Morning America next week. But that's just, we're going to work for it.
Yeah.
I promise
yeah.
you. I mean, yeah. which is, I'm grateful for. Because I don't want anything that we don't deserve. You
right.
know, we need to get better and become what we're supposed to be. And so he's just kind of nudging us here and there.
When you're on Sweet. Good Morning America, will you say, hey, how come you're not asking as good of questions as the Music Grow Show
absolutely.
Guys did?
would you
guys
that?
Really aren't so good at
write
this,
that
are
down.
You?
Write
George
that
Stephanopoulos.
Down. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I want to encourage everybody to go to your website, drinkwinemusic.com.
Yes.
There's a killer version you guys do of Katy Perry's Roar. You do
yes.
your own version of it. That I personally think is better than the original. It's,
well,
it kicks
you.
Butt.
Thank
it's
you.
A good
Thank
good
you.
Song,
we had a great time doing the video on that.
Yeah. Yeah. So...
Good stuff. Good stuff. This has been fun, you guys. Thank you guys very
Thank
much.
You.
Thank you for having us.
And stick around. We got another good hour coming in.
Yeah, Dylan Altman joining us.
Yeah.
Big old hit songwriter.
He brought his daughter. I think we're just going to interview her.
Yeah, we might do that.
I think so. Why not?
Come on back in just a few minutes here on the Music Grow Show.